Double L Show live from the Double L Farm. Echo, still there? I don't hear it anymore. What is the weekend?
Corey's here too.
And Corey's here too.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. No echo now.
No, we can hear the plane, so.
That's right. Better. I got my sound man, Kevin Burns, checking in for me tonight, telling me everything's clear. Thank you, Kevin. Not only a firefighter, but part-time sound man. All right. Let's see what's going on. Who's in the chat room tonight? We got Andy Vitkowski. Thank you, Kevin, as I just mentioned. A couple guests there. Guests, you can log in with a Facebook or Twitter account, and you can participate in the chat. Or you can just hang back as a guest, which is sometimes safer on this show. Sit back and watch it all go by. Mr. English, down in Florida, how's it going tonight? R. Lee, Tommy V, Tommy Head. Tommy V, Tommy Head. Jigs, that is. And Jay Brooks at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in tonight. Got a lot of things to cover tonight, plus our guest who's already called in, Corey Ruth, will be on the phone. So if you got any questions or anything regarding fly fishing or just fishing in general, but Corey's going to touch a lot on fly fishing tonight and some upcoming events at Wild River Outfitters here in Virginia Beach. So you can participate either through the chat room or by calling in. All right, so let's see what's going on. Corey, how you doing tonight? We'll get to the big stuff in a minute, but just check in with you. Don't want to leave you hanging.
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Very good. Very good. All right, well, while we got him right there, top thing on my list was this coming weekend here in Virginia Beach again is the Wild River Outfitters Demo Day annual. What is this, like the 20th year, I think, Corey?
It's been a lot of them.
Sort of seem like it,
doesn't it? I'm getting ready to take 20, really? Wow.
No, honestly, I thought I remember hearing, like, not too long ago, like 17 or something. I thought it is, like, they've been a lot. I don't know.
Well, they've been around for 30 years, so.
Yeah. I thought the one time, like, not too long ago, I heard it was just 17, so. But it does seem like 20 years anyway, either way you look at it. A lot of time in that sand, huh? Putting butts in boats, as they say.
That's for sure.
Yeah, so it's this weekend, and while I got you, because you got all the details and it saved me from opening another page, what time does that start?
Uh-oh.
9?
Yeah.
9 o'clock? Yeah, you don't even know. Good job. Because we always get there early anyway. Yeah, I believe it's from 9 to 2, I think is what I saw.
I know we got to be off the beach because there's a wedding afterwards, so don't come at 3 o'clock or we'll be gone.
Or you can photobomb the wedding if you get there.
Yeah.
Your kayak gear. So, yeah, so let's go ahead and say safety. 9 to 2 at the, depends on who you ask, 64th Street State Park, Seashore State Park, the Narrows, pretty easy to find. Just turn on 64th Street away from the ocean and follow it all the way to the back. Can't miss it.
Yeah, just remember you got to pay your...
Yeah.
Just remember you got to pay your fee to get to the park, too.
Yeah. So the Rangers are never on time, so have the right amount ready because you might have to put it in the honor system envelope there because sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. So.
Yeah.
And then come on back and check in with everybody at the Wild River tent. Right, you won't be able to miss any of it if you've never been before, but it's a great time to come and try
everything.
All kind of kayaks.
Yep.
What do you guys got new coming out of the store this year? Don't you have a couple new boats that you haven't had in the past that will be there?
We're going to have the, the Frontier from
New Canoe
will be new, and then we've got some new paddle boards coming, including the new Stride paddle board, which is actually made in Roanoke, Virginia, up in the mountains. So it's kind of got a local company there coming. And your usual suspects, Ocean Kayak, Native, Wilderness Systems, Hobie, Hurricane, Epic, New Canoe, and then we're also having a demo boat sale down on the beach. Those are used boats too, so there'll be some used boats you can check out there as well.
Oh, that's new. Hey.
Of course, the Native boats. All the Native boats will be out there, right?
Absolutely. New Slayers.
Shameless plug. Because Mark and I will be manning that station, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's you're going to be. At least y'all get to get what you get with what you know. I got to do paddle boards.
Oh wow!
How did you get stuck with paddle boards?
Because I guess I'm the paddleboard expert at Wild River Outfitters, too. No, it's just, you know, it was, they kind of dole everything out, and I'm a team player, so I'm going to help out with that. And then I'll have the new canoe as well and the stride paddleboard, so it'll be all good.
Hey,
it'll be fun.
No kidding, Corey. What you need to do is hook up Russell Hamm and see if he can help you, because he did pretty good at the fishing show this past winter. He could probably help you guys out with the paddleboard.
The water will be deeper anyway.
Yeah, I had to fall off of a paddleboard and 6 inches of water by Russell Hayes.
Hey, I can't pick on him because I can recall I did it at Appomattox demo day that time too. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I believe we got footage of that somewhere too.
Hey, I ain't scared.
As long as I'm near the epic boat guy, because that's the ones I like watching, those guys with the fast boats that got to keep moving when they stop paddling and do the old whoop.
Yeah, they're not exactly fishing boats. They're surf skis for sure.
Yeah. Well, very cool. So, yeah, so this weekend, if you're in the market for a new boat, another boat, whatever it may be, or just come out and see what's new for 2013, come out to the Wild River Outfitters Demo Day. DKA will be there also. Tidewater chapter of Howe will have a booth there. Not sure if the Pirates will be there or not. I haven't heard, but I know DKA, like I said, and the Tidewater chapter for Heroes on the Water will also be there. So, be a good day. The weather is looking outstanding. After today's little cool front we had, every day through Sunday I saw was either just over 80 degrees or at 80 degrees. So, looks like a beautiful weekend for anything. So,
straight into summer.
It'll be nice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's seesaw, fall, summer, and 100 degrees. So, but I'll take that over to cold. So we're good to go.
Yeah, amen.
Also this weekend, and hopefully somebody will get all this straightened out for next year. The Yak Attack tournament. It's full. You can't get in. So, but I just wanted to mention it. And good luck to everybody fishing in Luther's tournament. They upped the amount of people that he was letting in this year, and it's still filled up in pretty quick time. But this is the second year now that it's been the same weekend. Corey, this is a hint towards you, or maybe
we're on top of it, buddy. We're going to change it next year. So.
Yeah, past 2 years, Chris and I said, "Yeah, we'll go," and then womp womp womp.
Yeah, it's already been mentioned, or it's going to be mentioned to all the reps this weekend that we want to change. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. So maybe we'll all be doing a live show from Yak Attack Tourney next year.
Oh, that would be really cool.
Yeah, that would be fun. So anyway, so like I said, I just wanted to mention that, and good luck to everybody fishing the Luther's tournament.
And talking about that demo day, you're going to be able to register for the TKA charity tournament, too, to benefit the Boston Marathon victims. So you'll be able, if you have your cash in hand, you can register at the Wild River Demo Day for the charity tournament. It is cash only to enter that tournament.
We can try to find that TKA thing and share it here in the chat
room.
Well,
Joe and Andy are in the chat room. However, them two are probably private chatting about that roundhead they caught today.
Uh-oh.
Or how they kept their pretty blue boat that the only two pictures we saw all day. I even texted Mark at work. It's like, "Did you hear anything from the Eastern Shore? Anything?" He said the only thing he saw was a picture of the two blue kayaks. I thought, great, I saw that too. That's not much of a fishing report.
Well,
you know,
no news
from over there.
Look, now I'm wondering if they're even listening to us because nobody's saying anything. In the chat room, you know, Andy's usually quick to say something witty. Wow. That's to be really interesting what they're private chatting about. Oh, Andy just said hi. Ah.
Well, we do have a good fishing, though. I mean, the fishing has really improved around here, so I don't know what those guys did, and maybe they're being good little anglers and not saying anything, and there's nothing wrong with that. Keep your mouth shut if you want to. We're all guilty of that. Sometimes it's probably better to keep your mouth quiet. But anyway.
That's my story.
Yeah, sure.
We're sticking to it.
I had a good time on the water. That's the best report I can give you. But, fishing's really improved around here. Speckled trout, flounder, seeing all kinds of different things coming through the tackle shop. A lot of people having luck's getting better and better. We all know that there's a big red drum on the eastern shore. It's no secret, along with the big black drum over there. So you can go get a big, nasty, slimy drum and a big, pretty pumpkin drum, whichever way you want to go. Blues in Rudy Inlet, as Andy just put up. Chris and I went the other night. It was kind of a slow night, but there were still some choppers in there. I know because I lost quite a few pieces of plastic, but did land one nice blue fish.
Plus, we got to enjoy whatever military games were going on at the time. I mean, you name it, it was out there. Helicopters,
yeah, they were.
The boat.
They were doing an amphibious thing the other night. It was pretty noisy, but Woody wasn't here, so it was okay.
And if that wasn't enough already, the darn pirate ship came cruising through already, too. And they were hooting and hollering, hey, you catching anything? And maybe we were up until that point, but up with all that noise, fishing was over.
Hey, you'll have that pirate's creed memorized by the end of the summer.
Exactly. I thought it was kind of funny, though, for those who don't know, we're talking about they have a big, huge ship made to look like a pirate boat that goes in and around inside Rudy Inlet. And most of the times I've always seen it's been like kids' birthday parties and all, but this is all grown adults, but they were having cocktails and dressed pretty decently going out for the evening. But they were still doing, the staff on the boat were still doing all the pirate stuff, you know, still acting like, I didn't know if that was part of the fee. I guess they charge you full price, so. I thought it was pretty funny to listen to all those adults were on there cruising around Rudy Inlet having adult beverages, but there were still the knuckleheads that worked for the pirate boat up there talking in their best Jack Sparrow language or whatever. So.
Hey, did they still get to shoot the water guns?
You know what? It's funny you say that. Chris saw a little John boat, but I think it was just an angler, but we thought it was the dude because that's the first thing Chris said. She's like, that dude's going to freeze tonight if they're going to squirt him down with the water gun. I don't think it was that because I didn't see him get squirted down.
There was a big party at the aquarium, too, so there were tons of people on the balcony trying to talk to people fishing, and it's like there was no winning that night. It didn't make no difference.
Speckled Trout Joe had a nice evening chat on the balcony with a couple of the guys who had way too many at the free bar at whatever event they were hosting there. He had a good time. But anyway, so back to the fishing at hand. So, yeah, fishing's pretty good around here. Everybody who fishes, we know where they're at. It's pretty self-explanatory. All the trout moving out of the river, getting out into their summer haunts now, moving up into Mobjack. I've seen reports all the way up there of good trout. Back river, is doing well. Red drum, a lot of little reds all over the place. Getting pretty good. Haven't heard much about bigger flounder, but I do see the boats wind up along the tennis courts anytime we go over the Lesnar Bridge. So flounder bite inside Lynn Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be cool. And it's going to be a great weekend to get out there on the water. Like I said earlier, 80-degree temperatures across the board, so. Don't be sitting around the house this weekend. Get your honey-do list done so you can go fishing and go playing. And while we're doing fishing reports, let's go ahead and get to our Philip Ruckard from down in North Carolina. Philip Spencer this week.
Whatever Philip is going to say, Jay is going to disagree with. He just said the fishing is much better in Virginia.
Well, apparently. So let's see what Philip's got here. Philip says, here's what we got going on. Upper Roanoke River near the town of Weldon Core, you know all this stuff. The shad are still in the area. Striper up to 45 pounds are the main target. If you've never seen striper spawning, there's a whole lot of striper love happening right now. This is a free screen. I just read it right out loud. So, anyway, topwater baits can irritate spawning fish enough for a strike. basically Pip Phillips suggesting you go out there and mess up the groove of the stripers and they'll hit your plug. Coastal inshore, continue weather fronts keep most kayaks from anywhere but protected creeks along the coast and up the Neuse River, Pamlico Sound area. Scented bait suspended under corks or very slow work on the bottom were the best ways to combat the slow bite. There you go, Jay. Maybe you need to take a tip there from Philip. It should pop a cork out. And then on to the Piedmont freshwater. Surprise, surprise, Aunt B. That's Philip. It was windy in the Piedmont as well. 5-pound acre was the key to staying in one place for a length of time. I don't know who Aunt B is, but large bass have spawned out and are transitioning to summer patterns, he says. What the fuck, bass? Oh, he's meant to say, but bass can still be found guarding spawning areas and can be enticed easily with soft plastic jerk shad.
You just used the app.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to start pre-reading. I just clicked it open and I didn't read it beforehand.
Did you just use the app word?
Buck, B-U-C-K, buck.
Oh, okay.
Holy cow. Now I'm gonna get red carded on my own? Wow. And then local events, Phillip's got here, he's sharing with us for this coming weekend. The Get Outdoors Gang is hosting a water demo. Demo weekend, everybody. Demo day at Lake Brant. Where's that, Corey?
It's Greensboro.
Is it in
Greensboro? I'm not sure exactly. I don't, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here now.
Yeah, I got you. Anyway, so on Lake Brant this weekend, Get Outdoors will have a demo day for anybody in the Greensboro area. I guess that's better. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Doesn't say anything here about a wedding following, so you got a little more time to play at the demo day in Greensboro. And then here on the tournament side in North Carolina, the Carolina Yakfish Tournament Series, number 3, Saturday, May 18th at Jordan Lake. It's got a link here for CarolinaYakfish.com for more information. There's also an Armed Forces Day paddling fishing tournament Saturday, May 18th. Swansboro, North Carolina. I believe that's the event that Jay was talking about last week on the show. Jay Brooks called in. And that is armedforces.webs.com. More information on that. And he's also mentioning the Yak Attack tourney this weekend in Farmville. All right. Well, thank you, Phil. Once again, your timely weekly fishing reports from the North Carolina region. Appreciate it. All right, let's see what else we got. What's going on in the chat room? I just logged out of there. Anything good?
The usual suspect. Yeah, everybody's behaving.
So far, so early. Arlie's asking anybody fishing the Yak Attack tourney. So anyway, what else? I guess about all we got locally to share. I haven't nothing big and exciting's happened here. Oh, I got something exciting to share just because I was dubiously put into the admin position of yet another Facebook page. And more. Yeah, go ahead and laugh, because you're the one who set me up the flagpole for this one. Our very own local tackle shop, Ocean's East, has a Facebook page now, just like everything at Ocean's East. We take a little while to get around to it, but when we do it. So anyway, go over there and give us a like on the Ocean's East Bait and Tackle Facebook page. Maybe Chris can find the link there. I guess I could too somehow. But anyway, we got a Facebook page up for Ocean Beast, and hopefully we'll all stay on top of it and be able to give you guys up to minute what's going on at the shop and bait that we get in, any new or different lures or whatever's going on, inventory as it is. So, and you can share your catches and put up pictures on there. Let us know what's going on. You can block out the background if you want to, or you can be real quiet like Joe and Andy sort of being here tonight. I haven't seen anything yet to them, from them. But anyway, go give us a like. Who's talking smack about my husband? Oh, he's talking about the
left.
I'm not even going there. Okay, we're going to keep moving along. We're going to get to our guest tonight. So we have with us tonight Corey Ruth. Corey's more than a guest on the show. He's a good all-around friend of Chris and mine's. And with Corey for a long time now, we've known each other. Actually, I would have to say I can blame Corey for getting me into kayak fishing. And we've traveled a lot of miles, put on a lot. You know, it's funny today, Corey, I was just thinking about, what the heck was it? We were, something happened at work. I forget what it was now. But anyway, I was just thinking about it shows with the kayak fishing, how long, thinking about tonight's show coming up. And the times we used to stand in the booths for either was TKA or for Ruthless Fishing at the boat shows, fishing shows, and people would look at us and say, y'all fish out of those things?
Yeah.
Now you can't even, you know, now it's like back before kayaking was cool, if I can say that. Now it's like, you know, you can't even, the people who don't kayak fish come up and talk to us and ask what we're catching and where we're catching and what's going on out there and stuff like that. But when we all first started doing this, the small handful in this area, that's all we got was, y'all fish out of those?
I've
come a long way, not a very long period of time. What were you saying?
I said, y'all flip that thing over.
Yeah, exactly. Y'all, you ain't getting me in one of those.
No. Well, it's the, you know, it's become the fastest growing segment in sport fishing, and it's probably grown faster than anything else ever has. In less than, you're probably looking at less than 10 years, you know.
Oh yeah, I believe it. And you're right, it is. Last year I fished that Irish Water Dogs tournament, and they had some guys from the Coast Guard there, and they said that it was, they can't keep up with it, like just the amount of what's going on out there in the industry and with the Coast Guard rules. And they said, you know, PWC, the, you know, kayaks have exceeded the PWC market. And so, I mean, that's not a bad thing. With less mosquitoes on the water, more kayaks will be all right with me anyway. But, yeah, so, and it's grown leaps and bounds in no time, like you said, probably 10 years, so. It has definitely become very huge, and you've kind of been on the beginning and the forefront with that, just to kind of give some more credit for anybody who doesn't know who Corey is. Corey's just, what are we on, your second edition of a book that you've written? Corey's been doing this for quite a while now, and if you don't know him, you need to get to know him. And where's your Facebook page if you want to tell everybody how they can find out more what's going on with you on your Facebook? Because we just mentioned Facebook for Ocean Z's.
That's that Ruthless Outdoor Adventures.
Ruthless Outdoor Adventures. Cool. So what's going on, Corey? How's it been? How's it going? You ready for this upcoming fishing season?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, with demo day and working at the store, it's kind of put me in a whole different realm, I guess, as far as kayak fishing is concerned. But things, you know, once we get through the demo day, it should be pretty decent season, and you know, I'm going to try to do a lot more fly fishing this year. Kind of will be transitioning over, you know, probably by the end of the season it'll be all fly fishing. So I think there's a niche there, and with us bringing the stuff in the store, it just makes sense to jump on top of it and grab the niche, you know.
So are you seeing more people interested in fly fishing from the kayak?
I think last year it was about 50-50, to tell you the truth. And most of the return clients are fly fishermen.
Okay.
So.
But I, so that's what we're going to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying it's definitely, there's an interest locally. You know, after we did that casting clinic over there at the farm, a lot of people seem to be interested in, you know, it looks like a new leadership position I can take there to kind of get people in the right direction here locally, you know, get on top of it and get stuff in the store so we get everybody outfitted.
Right. Very cool. Yeah, and that's a problem around here, you know, and you've been doing it way longer than I could even think about doing, but we've never been able to successfully keep a good fly shop in this area. And I think it, I don't know why. I mean, we even had an Orvis store at one time at Hilltop, and that didn't last. Ann and the little thing she had at Lighthouse, and then opened up her own thing. They even tried it at Ocean Z's. Long Bay Point tried it, but it just, I guess you just can't have a dedicated fly shop around here for some reason. But I wish
and
I hope.
You need dedicated people in the store that knows what they're talking about and can sell the product and teach, you know, get people in the right direction. And that's been, I think that's kind of been the bane locally, is that it just, there's so much turnover and stuff in these shops and all, and it's just, like I said, you need the staff that understands the sport, because too many people are new or coming into it, you know. But, you know, on the other hand, your seasoned fly fisherman knows exactly what they want. They know what material they want to buy. You know, they're pretty easy customers. You just got to let them know that the stuff's there and that, you know, the people are there.
Right. And like Lefty said, it's not that all the clothes are that expensive, right? It's not a reason to get into fly fishing because the clothing is so damn expensive.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to cover tonight. That's what I kind of want to talk about, is kind of getting everybody off the ground and kind of, you know, if we could go through a basic guy walks into the shop or gal walks into the store and they want to get started in fly fishing. So it's kind of covered a gamut with people here tonight. Hopefully we'll get some questions out of the chat room. I know you don't see the chat room in front of you, so if something comes across, we'll have to interrupt you so we can make sure that we get all questions answered. So if anybody, like I said, top of the show, if you have any questions for Corey about fly fishing or anything in general, kayaking, fishing in general, but fly fishing, let us know. You can also call in and talk to Corey himself, and we'll get you covered. So let's just kind of, that's probably the best way to approach it. And kind of like, so if somebody's going to come in and just for a starter outfit, they want to get started, you know, fly fishing from their kayak, where are you going to point them to? What are we looking at?
I'm going to go on mute for a second.
Okay.
Yeah, guys, I heard a lot of background noise there. But, Marcus, I actually like buying a kayak. I mean, there's, you know, kayaking has gotten so diversified with the boats out there is that you need to figure out what you want to do first and where you're going to go. I mean, if you're going to be trout fishing or just fishing for panfish, it's pretty easy to get somebody outfitted, but if they want something that can do a little bit of everything, you got to kind of move them in the middle of the realm a little bit and move them up to a bigger weight fly rod. And this is funny, the guy Daniel Seaman sent me a IM over Facebook, and he's getting into fly fishing, and he was like, yeah, I got this 7-weight rod. He goes, but I don't think 7-pound tippet's going to be heavy enough for these bass that I'm fishing for. So I had to tell him, I was like, you know, it's not like conventional fishing. A 7-weight is not 7-pound test. A 7-weight is actually the weight of the fly line, which has nothing to do with how much power it takes or how much strength it is. It actually goes by how much that 30 foot of the fly line weighs. So a 1-weight may be 50 grains. A 2-weight might be 100 to 125 grains, and it goes up. You know, the higher the weight, the bigger the fly line, hence the bigger the fly to cast. So he was like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it now. So, you know, it's the first thing is getting a foundation, you know, come and do casting clinic, go in the store, come and talk to us so we can figure out what you want to do and go from there. You know, you got to have a basis of what you want to do, because there's really not one fly rod that's going to do everything, but we can get you close.
Okay, so let's just say we'll use our region because that's where we are, obviously. So if somebody wants to do some, you know, in shore saltwater speckled trout, smaller reds, croaker, whatever, flounder, and maybe go pump over, you know, to the lake and catch some bass or something like that, what would be a good kind of starting rod for somebody like that, the middle of the weight tip?
Definitely, like, between 5 and 7 is perfect for here. And really what it's going to come down to is, do you want that light rod action or do you want something with some backbone and not worry about? So, you know, some people don't like shooting dove with elephant guns. I mean, that's kind of, you know, a good analogy.
Right.
You know, if you want to feel the fight, you know, you don't want to catch croaker on a 9-weight. It's just, you know, it's going to kind of defeat the purpose for some people. But, again, if you go in the middle, like I said, about 6-7 weight is perfect for here. A 7-weight and a 6-weight will handle up to a 15 or 12-pound striper. You know, it's fly fishing, the fight's a little bit different than with conventional rods. Believe it or not, they're actually pretty durable. That length of the rod gives you a lot of flex, and it gives you a lot of forgiveness when it comes to powerful fish. And the only reason you can make a real mistake is if you don't give them some drag on the line, if they're going to bend you over to, you know, over your kayak or whatever. But usually it's, you know, the fight's pretty quick and you don't get a lot of breaks. So actually, most of the people break their fly rod when they're trying to land the fish after it's whooped, you know, trying to get it up to the side of the boat.
Right. So, okay, you were mentioning something there about the fly rod, that big of a rod. So what kind of fly rod are we getting, like a 9-foot rod?
Yeah, I don't think that the length really makes that much of a difference. You actually, the further you get that fly away from you is a good thing. So, I mean, for example, I have a couple of 8.5-foot and 8'7" fly rods. What they do is that those are stronger fly rods that allow me to kind of put a little more pressure on the bigger fish. But when you're getting into it, you know, a 9-foot rod is fine because one thing, the fly is not going less likely to pop you in the head if you're casting right. You know, it's up there over your head, 9 feet over your head, so it's the chances of it getting you a lot less than it is with the shorter rods.
Apparently you haven't watched me cast in a while.
Well, you know, to be honestly, it just doesn't, I mean, I wouldn't go over 9 foot. And just for the reason of that, as I was saying, is that when people trend, the fish is warped, you bring it up to the side of the boat, that's the most likely point for your rod tip to meet the butt of the rod, if you know what I'm saying. And that's where you get a lot of breaks when people are trying to get that fish. And, you know, what you got to do is once he's warped, you got to leader him in. You know, you got to put the fly rod down, grab the leader, get the fish in the boat. But, you know, as far as the actual fight, if you be patient and be smart and get the feel for everything, you can whoop a fish pretty quick with a fly rod. I mean, we've done it with big striped bass for years, you know.
I'm reading, but we're kind of just our usual chat back and forth. So what about line? Because I know that's always a big confusion.
Yeah, I mean, there's
line,
you know, it's,
floating
it's,
line, sinking line, weight forward.
Intermediate level, yeah, there's a lot of different things out there, but your best setup to start with for here, I mean, for Virginia Beach, for what we do, reds, trout, flounder, and intermediate weight forward line is probably your best bet, because what that allows you to do, it doesn't restrict you to the surface like a floating line does. You can fish the whole water column with an intermediate line. You can either use light flies and keep them near the surface, or you can use weighted flies like clousers and some of the fish gall flies and get them down to the bottom, and they'll sink with an intermediate line. You just have to be a little bit patient and kind of count the line down. But that's where I would start. But as far as the casting part, you might want to learn with the floating line first because it's a little more forgiving. But it doesn't take long once you get the casting motions down. It doesn't take long to move over to the intermediate line, which acts a little bit different, but it definitely allows you to fish more water than a floating line does.
Gotcha. That was my next thing I was going to talk about is casting. So casting from a kayak, one thing that's probably makes it a lot better these days is how many different boats are on the market that standing up is a lot better than it used to be, where, you know, you couldn't stand up and put a couple of different kayaks on the market, but now there's so many versatile, stable boats out there that's standing up, because sitting down and fly casting is a whole lot different than it is standing up anywhere, some land or kayak or whatever it may be. So what's the tips for somebody for sitting down on the kayak? Because I know what you gave me my best tip ever about the back cast, but if you could just kind of share with, if you don't have the ability to stand up in your kayak, or you just not comfortable standing up, what would be some of the, you know, benefits to your cast?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're on a kayak and you're stealthy. The only disadvantage is that you don't have that height advantage to be able to see down through the glare, to be able to sight cast the fish. But quite honestly, here, it's more about surface water moving around anyway. So you really, and the water's not very clear anyway, so you really don't see fish, but you see, you know, evidence that they're there. Second thing is that because you're in a kayak, you don't have to be a champion caster. You know, you're going to get closer to those fish. And, you know, it's more about learning structure or where fish hang out, you know, feeding behavior, seeing bait pop and all that stuff, and be able to get close enough and then, you know, work on your very accurate cast. But with a kayak, I mean, you've got no problem getting within 20 or 30 feet of a fish. We all know that, you know. So
you don't have to jump the reel.
Exactly. And the more line that's out, on the deck of that kayak, the more problems going to be with it, because it hooks onto everything. And especially, you know, now that we're using Hobies, you really got to be aware of that pedal drive, because it is a fly line shredder. So,
you know what I always tell people, and that's one, you know, keeping your kayak layout when you start rigging it simple, or at least have stuff on there that's easily removable when you go fly fishing. I always tell people, if you ever lose your car keys in the house, just get your fly rod out, because the fly line finds everything and it'll snag.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you could totally clear the deck and it would get hooked on a grommet on your pants or something, you know. I mean, it finds
right.
a place, like you said. But,
very
you know,
cool.
Learning how to make the short, accurate cast is really, I mean, you learn the fish on the kayak, you know you can get closer to them and just, you know, present the fly as close as you can without spooking the fish. And, you know, standing up's not an issue. You don't have a bunch of line laying under your feet. You don't have to do the what we call the deck dance, you know. So you go to cast and you're standing on fly line. You don't usually have that problem when you're sitting down. So, I mean, there's advantages to both ways. And just because you have a, you know, a boat that doesn't allow you to stand, it by no means should not consider trying to fly rod with that boat.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right, so we've got the rods. I guess we skipped right over that. We already went to casting, and we didn't talk about reels. Silly me, I kind of jumped all over the place there. So,
well,
you got a rod, you got line, and you're casting, but you got to have a daggone thing to roll it up on. So what kind of reels are we talking about here?
Well, it's, you know, Lefty, you mentioned him. He tells you that it's just all a fly reel is something to hold your fly line, but that goes more from trout fishing. You know, if you got something with some shoulders on it, you want to be able to tire the fish and slow them down, so you want something with a little bit of a drag on it. And there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, there's really cheap reels and there's really expensive reels, but there's actually decent fly reels out there that probably don't cost more than a good spinning or bait cast reel. TFO has a lot of great reels. Allen Fly Fishing. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there. There's no price shouldn't scare you away, but you definitely want to look inside that reel and make sure that it at least has a cork or a carbon fiber drag in it, preferably carbon fiber, especially around salt, because the cork's going to break down eventually.
That was my next question about, with the salt environment, what do you look for in a reel as opposed to, you know, fresh water? Same thing with, you know, conventional gear, you know, it changes the dynamics a lot once you start getting into the salt water. So what are some of the things you look for in a salt reel? And you've already answered one of those, the drag, making sure, I guess, the maintenance and care is just like everything else, rinse it off, hose it off when you get done.
That's the main thing, is just maintaining it, because there's not a lot of fancy stuff in a fly reel. Like I said, really all it is just a line holder. You know, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I never use the reel to retrieve the fish. You know, I'll hand strip it, put the line back in my boat, because when the fight's over with, you got to get the line off the reel again. You know, you might as well just put it in the deck of the boat and have it ready to cast, you know, as soon as you're done with the fight.
Yeah. That made me think of something else when we were talking about salt water, but the line. And if anybody's spent one or two times looking through a fly fishing magazine, there's more lines out there than anything else. I mean, at least fishing lines, I don't know, it doesn't seem as bad with that as it does with fly lines, because you have salt water, cold water, hot water, clear water, dark water, blah, blah, blah water. Does all that really matter that much? And I'm not just talking about Virginia, our area, but like salt water, like the breakdown of the lines, does that make sense, what I'm asking you?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, there are lines that throw weighted clousers better than others. There are lines that basically, you're talking cold water and salt water. The difference between those two lines is that in summertime, a cold water line will be like limp spaghetti. And basically, the plastic melts. I mean, that's what we're saying, is that the cold water lines don't do well in hot water, whereas if you had a hot water line in cold water, it's like fishing with a clothes hanger. It gets stiff and it doesn't cast. So that really does matter, and because we do have such a variety of water temperatures here, I mean, we go from 80 to 40, even less, you know, on a year's basis, it does really matter to have, you know, one for each season, or you're gonna notice some casting difference. There's a few all weather lines, but they seem to be a little bit noodly to me. They're soft. I don't like the way they tend to knot up a lot, you know, in the deck of the boat. You don't need that on a kayak. I mean, ideally, the ideal kayak fishing line would probably be only about 50 feet long, if you ask me. That way it doesn't cause a lot of problems.
Gotcha. And the best thing to do is probably walk into a good local shop wherever you are and talk to somebody there and really explain to them what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, not many people fish in the wintertime, so they probably don't need a cold water line, you know.
Yeah, not many, but that's some of our best fly fishing around here is when the stripers start stacking up, though, huh?
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
You don't have to, you barely have to even know how to cast it back. You just got to flip it out in front of the kayak. You can smack them with the tip of the rod.
That's just put the fly in the water. That's all that matters. You're definitely going to hook up.
So you and I were talking last night, and you were gracious enough to say you were going to donate some flies tonight. We're going to get somebody's going to get a lucky collection of the must-have flies from you. But if you were to go out, I mean, you know, getting into fly tying, that's a whole other night, a whole other topic. But what would be some of the basic flies for also for somebody to get started here? You got to have something in your bag to tie on. So what would you suggest would be to go buy or get started with?
Well, I definitely the venerable Clouser, which is, you know, in every sense is nothing more than a jig that you can throw on a fly line. It's weighted, so it goes through the water horizontally, so it looks like a bait fish. You can tie it in any color under the rainbow. They're quick to tie. They're durable flies. I think that Lefty Cray has said that he's caught more fish on the Clouser than any other fly in his fly box. So,
here's a good question. Somebody in the chat room asked, what do you think is a good price range for a beginner or starter fly rod?
It's cordial, you know. I would say if you can find the whole kit, fly line, reel, and rod in a combo for less than $200, around $200, you're going to get something decent. You're going to, especially most of the that price point rods are warranted. I mean, a good example is the NXT system that TFO has. It's actually, I think it comes out to be like $180. Lifetime warranty, no questions asked if you break it. The rod's already spooled up with an all-weather line that matches the rod. I mean, they put everything together. Also, actually has a leader already on it. So, I mean, all you have to do is string it up and put a fly on it and start fishing. And it's a great rod. It's actually a kind of a forgiving rod. So it's a good learning rod, but it can still stay in your arsenal, you know, for your lifetime. It could be the first and last rod you ever buy.
Just to clarify, that question was brought to you by Tom Vanderheiden, who's giving me hell in the chat room for calling him somebody. Do you feel better now, Tom? Sorry. Carry on.
You can find a lot of stuff out there, but you definitely, fly fishing is one thing that you're going to get what you pay for with that, with everything in this, you know, in that realm. But I mean, like, I think Long Bay Point still has those $19 Korean buggy whips that they bought when we worked there, Mark.
Right. Well, somebody just wrote, Tommy from Tommy Head Jigs just wrote, so I should get rid of my Wally World fly rod.
No, you shouldn't. I mean, if you can fish with it, if it works for you, it's fine. It's fine. I wouldn't, you know, it's a start. It's like buying a you know, dare I say it, a Dick's kayak. Most people are going to move up after they get the bug, you know.
Somebody.
All right.
Okay, Jay asked, what's the best fish to build confidence on?
Croaker.
Be careful how you say that.
No, obviously striped bass. I mean, really, they're, you know, you can go out there with a fly rod, on your kayak at night underneath the night light line, pop a black fly on there that's 2 to 3 inches long and just absolutely slay them and not have to cast more 20 or 30 feet, which, you know, to me, it's one is getting comfortable with how everything works with the fly rod realm, you know, getting comfortable with it on your kayak. That's the start. Then you can start refining your casting technique and, you know, tying the flies and changing over to different rods and all that. But, yeah, definitely a striper will eat anything you put on a fly rod. I think if you tied a cigarette butt on there, they'd hit it.
Right. And if I can make a suggestion on that, and this goes for anything you're trying to learn or change in your fishing, going from a spinning reel to a casting reel or going from spinning casting to fly fishing, the biggest thing I always tell people I think helps a lot is to leave the things you're comfortable with at home.
Exactly.
Once you go out there and you have one or two foul ups with whatever gear it is. Like I said, if you get one or two bird's nests with your bait caster, you're going to put it down and you're going to go back to your spinning reel because that's what you're comfortable with, and then you're just going to be done. So if you only take your fly rod or you only take your bait caster reel on a trip, it's either you're going to waste your time and go back home because you're going to get frustrated, or you're going to sit up there and you're going to teach yourself and you're going to learn how to use it properly, and then you'll get more confident with it. But if it's easy to put it back in the tackle box and go to what you like to do, you're never going to really get the time to that you need to put into something to learn how to do it. So,
yeah,
sitting out there with a fly rod, even if it's not catching, if it's just casting too, with it, you know, everybody gets all cranked up, you know, it's like, You might not have caught much or anything at all, but with the fly rod, getting out there and getting the proper technique, and probably the first few trips out there, you should be thinking more about this casting, you know, whether it's a hook with the barb smashed and, you know, cut off so you don't smack yourself in the back of the head, but you're just out there casting and getting comfortable with it, because, you know, if you get out there in a big old melee of striper and bluefish hitting on top water at the Braybridge Tunnel and you got that whipping stick going, you're going to get all excited. Next thing you know, you're going to be everywhere but in the water.
Hey, Corey, Sean Russell would like to know, would a stripping basket help in a kayak?
Well, it's important on if it interferes with your paddling or not. Standing up, yes, it would be fine, but sitting down, what happens is when you're stripping the fly and trying to strip line into that stripping basket, you have to lift everything up really high to get over the edges of the stripping basket. Now, there's a company out there, that Skinny Water Culture. This guy is making a mat with, like, these flexible spikes. It's a silicone mat with these spikes that come up out of it that will manage line, and that would probably be a better option for a kayak because it doesn't force you to get higher. And, you know, you know that when you're kayak fishing and you tend to lift things up high, you mess your center of gravity up. So you're more likely to go over because you've gotten everything up, you know, to clear that stripping basket. But if you're standing up and it's around your waist, that's a different ballgame. So it would work in that case.
Here's another good question. What is the lightest weight fly rig you would recommend for inshore salt species?
Well, it's kind of cool that the manufacturers have kind of figured out where you need to be with fly fishing, and most saltwater fly rods have a fighting butt on it, and a fighting butt actually is pretty important for kayak fishing because it gets the reel a little bit further with you if you need to put it on your leg to get some leverage on it. Now, that being said, the smallest rod that I've seen with a fighting butt is a 5-weight, and then PFO has what they call a salty 6, which is their smallest rod with a fighting butt, and that would be my suggestion, is check out that 6-weight because it's a really nice little light rod, but it's got some serious power to it, and it feels like you're fishing with a 4-weight.
Cool.
So, like I said, 5 would probably be as low as I would go in Lynn Haven. I mean, that's because there's chance of getting a 30-inch drum in there, and they're going to take that rod home with them. You know, they just can't hold up.
You're going to be angry on more than one way then.
Exactly.
Bad day all around. Didn't get to land it and lost your rod. Or all your line, at least. Watch it go spinning out.
Yeah, usually when the rod gets broken, you lose that little leverage that you have on the fish, and they're going to break you off. And usually they take the tip section with them when that happens.
Gotcha. I keep going back to line. I don't know why I'm like infatuated with the line thing tonight.
Well, that's the mechanics.
Backing, that's all that stuff. Like the line backing everybody. So what do you, like, how much line backing, all that stuff, does that matter a lot? Do you get the big runs? Are you worried about all that?
I can tell you for inshore, like for Lynn Haven, Back River, and all that, you probably need about 100 yards. Nothing's really going to take you to the hole on a fly rod in there. It's just we don't have bonefish and stuff that make really long, blistering runs. Now, that being said, is if you're going to go over to Eastern Shore and go after those big drum, you need to have about 250 or 300 on there. And my big fly reels all have, I use 80-pound Power Pro as my backing.
Okay.
And my biggest reel, I got 500 yards on it.
I seriously doubt there's one single person in this chat room that can dump a reel the way you can, Corey.
I think he's more talking about the fish dumping the reel on you, taking all the line off. But.
Exactly. It's not about casting. This is you know, your backing is your insurance policy, you know. Because if you just put 100 yards of fly line on there or 100 feet of fly line, fly fishing wouldn't be such a fun sport anymore, you know.
Right. Well, plus you're in a kayak, so you do have the ability to kind of keep up, you know, if they can pull you a
That's
too.
True.
Like you're not in an anchored boat or stuck in an area that you can't get to. So if you got a little bit of drag around, you can kind of, plus you, just like anything else in the kayak, if you keep them right, you can feed them a little quicker than you can on an anchored boat also. Joe says he can. Hooking it to a car and telling the car to go forward is not dumping the reel, Joe.
Well, and like I said, in the old days, we were using, you know, if I was fishing freshwater, I was using 10-pound Dacron. If I was fishing saltwater, I was using 20-pound Dacron. And the reason that was the magic number is my tippets, you know, the other end, we'll talk about the other end of the fly line, the tippet is where the weight class is, was never more than what my backing was. So I knew my backing would always hold up stronger than the tippet would.
But that's a good point we did not touch on. Yeah, let's leader, tippet, explain that and kind of what's a good setup, locally.
Let's take a step back and we'll explain what we'll just kind of real quickly go through, put the puzzle together. You got the fly line, right? Okay, the backing goes on the fly line. Backing can be anywhere from 50 feet to 500 yards according to what you're going to use it for. Then the fly line attaches to the backing. And the fly line is actually what we're casting. That's what makes this whole mechanism work, the fly line. And then at the end of the fly line, you have the leader. And typically, in trout fishing, the leader is actually tapered, so it goes from a big diameter down to a small diameter. And then if you get even more fancier than that, at the end of the leader is your tippet, and your tippet is your weight class. That's where your power is. That's where if you want to get world record bass on 2-pound tippet, that's the part that you don't want to break or do break or whatever, you know.
Right.
But, you know, to simplify that, I've very seldom do I use tapered tippets in salt water. I usually use 10-pound fluorocarbon or 20-pound fluorocarbon. That way, and it's kind of funny because it matches I knew it matched my backing weights. So, you know, if I was fishing for trout, stuff that was really spooky, I would do 10. But for redfish, croaker, striper, everything else, straight piece of 20-pound mono, fluorocarbon, about 6 foot long, and it turns over just fine with the saltwater rods. I mean, trout fishing would be a different story. I definitely would use the tapered leaders because you and me both have seen the little specks of dust that they throw on their fly rods. So
yeah.
It's kind of a different ball game than throwing a 2-alt Clouser or bend back. But like I said, it's a lot easier.
And we're not fishing in gin clear. We're not fishing in that gin clear either Bahamas water or clear river trout fishing either. It's not the, you know. So the fluorocarbon's good enough.
And that's right. It disappears anyway. You can't see it, you know, and neither can the fish, especially 10-pound. 10-pound is almost gone. But you know, simple rigs. It's really simple to do. It's kind of hard to explain. It's a lot better to show people, you know.
Yeah, that's
what's
where you lose
on
our radio show. Yeah, that's where you lose.
Yeah. But we'll, you know, we have every intention of getting back up to speed and being able to show that. And I think that maybe that might be a good topic for one of the Liar's Corners to actually just go through the actual fly rod with people and you know, get the bug started that way. Show them what it is, what different fly rods, sizes, and all that, and just kind of go through them and answer the questions that way.
And tell our listeners about the Liar's Corner. What's going on? What is the Liar's Corner?
Well,
I know I'm part of the Liar's Corner, so I got to start getting my crap together and get my lies straight so I don't get in trouble.
Yeah, you're up next, for sure. I think you're the June Liar's Corner. But, yeah, we kind of, you know, it's the second Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock, and basically we're trying to take an approach to more laid back, just come in like you're going into a tackle shop and just kind of sit down and just shoot the breeze with the guide or the expert who's in there. And it's not, you know, we're trying to get away from the canned presentations because we want this to be audience driven. We want the people to come in there and know what questions they want to ask and just kind of, you know, interact with the guides or with the experts or whatever. You know, that's kind of been our goal with it. And it's getting a rocky start, but we're going to stick with it. And like I said, maybe help with the radio show and some other outlets and media stuff, we'll get it going, you know. People are fishing right now, and we know that, you know, Tuesday might not be the ideal night, but we'll get it refined and get it right for sure.
Yeah, it'll be good. We can do a show from the Liar's Corner. We'll have a Liar's Corner radio show on Tuesday.
Okay, can I squeeze in my big question now? Is everybody ready and listening? For this is the winning question for Corey's Fly. Lies. Ready? What type of drag washer did Corey recommend for saltwater fly reel? I'm going to repeat it again. What type of drag washer did Corey recommend?
Andy Bukowski.
Wow, that was quick.
Somebody was listening. Tom Vanderheiden had another good question, Corey, that you did not see because you don't have the chat room. He wants to know how you keep the flies alive.
They die when the animal that died that we tied the fly out of it died, so they're not alive at all.
Yeah, once I start wrapping them to the hook, they usually give up right there.
Yeah, a second twist usually.
Well, congrats, Andy. Andy Bukowski is the winner of the fly.
The nice thing about that one is, well, actually, no, Andy is going to use them. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure anybody will use them. These are flies that you've tied personally, correct, Corey?
Yeah, I haven't tied them yet, but I'm going to tie up a variety of five flies for Andy, and I'll also throw in another casting lesson with him too, for it, too, there. So.
Oh, sweeten the pot.
Yep, sweeten it up a little bit. Yep. Yeah, I'm gonna tie some. I'm gonna give you some redfish patterns that work really good in Lynn Haven. Some that I was we're tying tonight at the Liar's Corner, but I'll try to do it again in the near future if people can come in and see how we make them. But Andy will have some in his tackle box.
We want to see pictures, Andy.
All right, one other thing I want you to explain, just because you have put up a lot of pictures, and I have no clue about this, is what is that goo, the goo flies that you've been tying? Tell me real quick, or at least maybe even our listeners that aren't familiar but haven't seen those pictures. What's going on with that stuff? Because I've been very intrigued in watching your flies and that stuff.
Well, in the past, to make a lot of the realistic flies, we've had to use epoxy and super glue and stuff that take a long time to set up, and you've got no control over it all. You just kind of, you know, you either got to put stuff on the fly and then put it in one of those rod turners so it kind of keeps moving around, you know, but you really have no control over to make it look like a fish's head or a shrimp's eyes or crab claws or whatever. You just don't have the flexibility and the control. Well, Clear Cure Goo is actually an alternative to epoxy and other fly fishing cement, such as head cement and stuff like that. They have like five or six different formulations that basically, when you get it where you want it, you shine a UV light on it, and it sets, I mean, in seconds. So you can basically build a fly with this stuff and sculpt it and get the shape you want and make flies. And if you go to their website, there's some stuff on there that just people put, you know, phenomenal amount of talent in. It just blows what I've done away. But it makes making these flies a lot quicker now. A fly that usually would take a couple of days, I can knock out in about half an hour. So,
wow.
It's great stuff. It's a little expensive, but you get a lot of flies out of a tube of it. I mean, it definitely it goes a long way. And we're going to bring it in at Wild River. I've got the catalogs and stuff, and as soon as we put something together, we're going to bring it and we're going to stay more regional with our fly choices and our equipment. We're not going to be a trout shop. I mean, we can special order that stuff, but we're going to worry about trout, redfish, flounder, largemouth bass, brim, you know, the stuff that we catch here in Tidewater. That's what we're going to cater to.
Brim, poppers, you're going to get poppers, 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 poppers?
Yes, and I don't know, not many of you know who Walt Carey is. He's a very good friend of mine. Walt does not sell his flies to just any store anymore. He'd gone in retirement, and God bless him, he lost his wife about 6 months ago, so he's tying again, and he only sells to certain stores, and he's told me that he will sell to us, so we will have his poppers in Wild River Outfitters. Yep.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yep,
very cool.
And you're going to like this, is that Walt is actually moving from up northern Virginia to Cortland, so he's
really?
Going to be back in the Tidewater area. Yeah, so he'll be local again here soon, in June, I think he said. So maybe we can get him out to the shop to come and tie some flies at Wild River Outfitters for us and talk about his poppers.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, they were born here. I mean, this, you know, popper fishing for bass goes way back in Back Bay. I mean, there was a time when that was the only way you could catch those fish because the grass was so thick. You couldn't throw a worm in there. You know, you had to find a pothole and put a popper in it. And that's where, like I said, the fishery was born here, and he's, you know, going to come back, and it'd be good to get him to come in and talk about the evolution of that and how the fishery in Back Bay is, you know, gone away but starting to come back now. So definitely, you know, some good stuff going on with us as far as fly fishing.
Awesome. Very cool. We need it around here. We got a good fishery
yes,
for us,
do.
But things just don't, the shop, quote unquote, doesn't seem to make it. So having one here would, I think, be very cool, and it would work having somebody like yourself, people that like to do it, care about it, definitely be the success of it. So, well, Corey, thank you. We're at our top of our hour. Appreciate you giving up your Tuesday evening to spend with us. And everybody come out to the demo day when Corey's not falling off of a SUP board. You can ask him more questions. Maybe if he's got time.
This is
please
funny.
Have your cameras ready.
Our lovely friend Joe would like to know, do they fly fish for those big reds or anyone actually? He's talking about the bull reds, Corey.
Kendall, is a guy that Kevin sees over there a lot, and they catch them, but it's a, you know, it's those fish are bottom feeding. You don't get a lot of topwater hits off of those big redfish, so you have to fish a sinking line over there to get the fly down in that feeding zone, and that's a whole different ball game. A sinking fly and a sinking line, you got to have your A game on for that.
Yeah, Joe, and then, drooling. He wants to know what size rod would you need to fish for a 50-inch fish.
I would go no less than a 10 weight with a really good reel with some serious backing on it and some serious drag. My rig is on a fly rod, that's a fish that's going to take you out for, you're going to be in a nice little fight for a little while. You're not going to whoop him up to the boat really quick, you know.
And that's some deep water over there, too, so you're already getting down there. So and then if he stays down there in that fight for a while, if you get him in the deeper ledges off of the shoals or something.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, once everything is said and done, you're looking at a $500 setup, Joe, just to get you that red, maybe.
Joe's got that kind of money. Don't let him fool you. He's rolling.
Hey, you got it like that.
He's rolling.
Oh, no,
he was rolling.
Corey, when are you going to take me out to teach me?
What do you mean? Half an hour ago, you said he was done.
I'm hoping that after demo day that I get an opportunity to spend some time out there, because I'm going to take Mark Lozier's advice, and I'm going to go out there with just my fly rods, and I'm going to whip it to death. And I'm not taking bait. I'm not taking conventional tackle with me. I'm taking the flies that I think will do it, and I'm going to give it my best shot, you know.
Yeah. Well, we want you to call back in and tell us how that went, too. Give us all the details. You're always welcome here,
you'll
Corey.
You'll see it on Facebook, I'm sure.
See everything on Facebook, stuff you don't want to see sometimes.
Yeah.
That's true. Not for me, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, Corey, thank you very much. Everybody remember this weekend, Wild River Outfitters. Corey will be there and all the gang from the store at the demo day. You'll have all the reps for the kayaks that Wild River carries will be there, so you can ask them questions, get personal, and find out about the boats, what's going on with everything.
Mark and I will be there. I'll bring some kayak fishing radio stickers. Hit me up.
Oh, yeah, we still got some left.
Wait, I was just getting ready to say, oops, do we have any left?
Yeah, we had some. I saw them the other day, yeah. So if you want some, be there early. But we don't have a lot. So.
Yeah, because once it gets going, can't help you.
That's right.
When they're gone, they're gone.
That's right. Well, there isn't any more, they're all gone. If the phone doesn't ring, it's probably me. All right, everybody. Have a good week. Nice weather coming. I want to see some fish pictures and fish stories from everyone out there. I got a trip on Friday and Sunday, so hopefully I'll have a good report to bring back to you guys on Tuesday. Saturday, like Chris said, Chris and I will be at the demo day hanging out at the native booth. So come by, say hi. Let me shove you off in a kayak or two, push you around. That's all we got. Chris, get us out of here, please.
Oh, I was reading the chat room. You were talking to me?
You're the only Chris I got.
Thanks, Corey.
Bye, folks.
Good night, Corey. Thanks again, man. See you Saturday.
Well,
with that said,
good night, everybody. Remember, take your children fishing. They are our next generation angler. Safety, safety, safety. Good night, everybody. Tight lines, no matter where you're fishing.